The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin podcast. I'm one of the hosts of the Noob Show, Sean Lavery. My co-host Susie is still traveling at the moment, and she might jump in later if she can, but otherwise we wish her a good Super Bowl Sunday, and she will be back next week. But I wanted to, you know, hop on and get something recorded for tomorrow. And my guest tonight was gracious enough to accept my invitation on relatively short notice. He has been on the Noob Show before, but it's been a while. He was back. He was on the show back when it was Ryan and I doing the show. So that gives you a little bit of a clue how long ago it was. It's been a little bit of time since he's been on. But I've been following him along with him on his social media, and I could see that he's still actively fishing despite how cold the weather it gets, and being successful. So I reached out to him and asked if he could come on and share some of his wintertime or cold water techniques and tips with us. And he was gracious enough to accept. So I wanted to take a second and welcome back Mr. Jim Ware to the Noob Show. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, man. Great to be here.
No problem. Thanks again for coming on. So I know you mentioned you had a tournament yesterday. How'd that go?
Not too good. Yeah. Not too good. Had a decent practice. And then yesterday the weather changed, and it poured down rain probably three quarters of the time. I ended up with four fish. It was on Lake Seminole. It was a Georgia Bass Nation. And we have a grassroots club in the state called Peach State Kayak Anglers. And, okay. So it was a combined tournament for them. Had 68, I think, signed up. So it was a pretty good turnout.
I was going to say, but that's a pretty good showing for February.
Yeah, sure was. But, I think the top 10, there was, or maybe the top 7, all in the 90-plus inches. Josh Counts, he's from down in that area. He won it with 99 inches.
Holy cow.
I was punching. And yesterday on practice, I had some really good bites. An area I went back to punch, I pulled 13 inches out. I don't know where the big ones
add up to 99 inches, unfortunately.
Yeah, no. But I had fun, and it was, it was fun.
What better than work? Well, yeah, exactly. Any day. What was your water temperatures like?
It was 56 where I was at. Lake Seminole's a unique lake. It's got two river arms feeding it, the Flint and the Chattahoochee. Both of those were probably around the same water temp, and I was on the Hooch side with the mid-50s water temp. And then in the middle of the center of the Y, where the Flint comes in and the Hooch, you have Spring Creek. Well, all that water is fed by springs, and the water's generally clearer and warmer in that center area.
Okay.
And there, it was in the 60s, I understood from other guys. Wow. But I don't think it was one in that warmer water. I think it was in one of the river arms.
Interesting. Well, I know you have been having some luck lately, how cold is it there? When I say cold, it's always relative. Like, our water temperatures here in Pennsylvania are, high 30s, maybe,
Okay.
We're going to have a few warmer days next week where it's going to get up in the 60s. So I'm hoping we're going to break the 40 degree mark, but it's going to take a couple warm days in a row to get us up above that.
Right. So about 44, around here where I was fishing at, it's the lowest I've seen it. Now we did have a really cold spell, and, unfortunately, I was working during that time, so I couldn't even fish. But buddies of mine said it got into high 30s where we fish at. But this wintertime fishing in the south, it's 50 degrees. It seems like 50 when the water hit temp after turnover, the lakes turn over, and the water temp hits 50 degrees. That's the magic temp. That's when they start getting active again and settle in. And that's when I took the second week of December off for vacation just because of that.
Okay.
Historically, that's been the prime time.
Gotcha. Okay. And for the folks who don't know what turnover means, can you just explain that a little bit and how you know when that happens?
Right. And down here in the south, and I'm sure they do up north, but the lake stratified in the summertime, and so you've got photosynthesis, and so the sunlight can only reach down so far. And there's not going to be any oxygen lower than that. Well, the water down here is generally it just told me my earbuds are about to go out, so. But anyway, so summertime, say the top 20 feet of the water is above the stratic line is at 20 feet. You've got, once it starts cooling, cold water's heavier than warm. So it starts cooling off, and it's heavier, and it starts falling, and it pushes this muck water from down below with no oxygen. It pushes it and it mixes. Well, I say the fish get a headache when all that's going on, because it's hard, really, really tough when the lake is turning over. And you can even see the water will change color, and it'll look kind of funky on top. It'll have a muck look to it, at least where I fish, the lakes I fish. Mm-hmm. And then once it cools off, it's in the 50s. The water clears up because, the algae can't bloom in this colder water. And the water gets clear and sunlight can reach down to 40 feet. And once, there we go. That's my unscientific way to describe.
No, I think that's perfect.
Turnover.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So after that turnover happens, then, that's when the fishing kind of turns on again.
Yep. It's, and I'm not sure So in wintertime, it's all about the bait. And if you know what the bait is doing, and threadfin shad's basically what we have. And there's some, you know, gizzard shad, and gizzard tend to go a lot deeper. But threadfin's the major forage fish around here. Well, they'll just gang up in schools. And like one of the lakes I fish on doesn't have any, doesn't have a feeder creek per se. So they gang up over the deepest holes in the lake, which is about 40 feet. And the bass, they know that. And they go to those deep holes. And in some of these Highland Reservoir lakes in North Georgia, the shad will run up into these creek arms and gang up, and the fish know that, and they'll follow them. So just knowing what the bait generally does, and, you know, when it gets cold, can help you in big ways. Right. 'Cause they're not going to be where the bait's not.
Right. So you really got to find the bait first, and then that'll help you find the bass. You're not going to just kind of stumble upon bass spread out and just kind of fan casting or that.
Right. Not in these, like, these bass will school up in some major schools. And they're not going to be schooled up when the bait's not around. I haven't seen it. Now, they may be, you know, they might try. I don't know what they do between, you know, when they're suspended during turnover, because that's generally what they do. They'll suspend, and they're really, really hard to catch. You know, once they group back up, and you may see them in a void area. I don't know.
You might pick one off here and there, but
So, but and they're not always on the bait. Now, I've found like a giant school of shad, and there's no fish around it, but I'll start circling around and, you know, searching, and side imaging is huge in this. And, you know, it may be 50, 75 yards away, and then bingo, there they are. Sometimes they're just sitting down on the bottom. They're not active, and a spoon is going to help you, because it's a reaction bite when they hit it. And throw that spoon out, let it sink to the bottom, and just rip it through the school. Sometimes it takes 6, 8, 10 casts, you know, to get one to go after it. Once one goes for the bait, it seems like all of them, like, no, you're not going to get that. I'm getting it. So
basically, and I know you sent me some examples of what to kind of look for on your side imaging and stuff. Basically, you're finding the bait, and then you back off from that spot, turn on your, find your side imaging, and then.
They just went
dead to me. I hear you. Yeah. I can still pick you up some, though.
Okay. Good.
There we go. Yep. It just kind of picked them up again. So. I can hear you.
All right. Good.
We'll put this up on the screen, and you can kind of talk me through kind of what we're looking at here. Let me go ahead and share this. So that was the first picture you sent me, which is a heck of a nice bass. And is there any story behind that guy?
Yeah, there is. So smallmouth, obviously. That's on Dale Hollow. And that's in the middle of December, I think, around the 19th of December. The water temp up there was like 42 when that day. I wouldn't say I know Del Hollow, but I know that spot.
And I know this one area.
And it's about a 4-hour drive from here. And that's the southernmost part of it. Closest drive for me. There's a roadbed between me, probably right under me in that pit. And there's an old building foundation. Well, if you look at the maps of Dale Hollow, there is roadbeds everywhere. And there's several towns that are actually underwater.
Wow.
And they scuba dive up there. It's a popular scuba diving area. But anyway, this rope bass love hard bottom and structure. And there's a lot of these building foundations. There's about three on that roadbed. And they just they were ganged up there. So this fish, I caught everyone. I had 94 inches, I believe, for my five biggest that day. And that's a wobblehead jig. And I thought I brought one in, but I don't.
That's a
Picasso Fantasy Swinger, 3/4 ounce, with a rage bug on it. And I was in. That is the easiest bait to use for like deep. Around rock, it seems like that crawl bait, when there's a lot of rock structure, that works well. All I was doing is just bomb casting out past the school of fish that I found. They were sitting just on the deep side of the roadbed, which the roadbed comes up and over a submerged point, and they were on the point, just still on that point, but on the deep side of the roadbed.
Okay.
And you just reel that thing slow and maintain bottom contact with it, keep it moving, and when they hit, you'll feel like it's not touching anything. It'll just go light.
Okay.
And I speed up my reeling, and sure enough, your rod loads up, and lean into it.
Awesome, awesome. But, so you knew where the roadbed was. I imagine you had that marked, and so you just went to the roadbed, then found the school above the roadbed, and then started casting to the school.
Yeah, that's it. And I would just circle around the school, and they would kind of float. It would be on this side of it or that side, and they might be a little deeper, and they might move a little closer. I caught one on a big one on a spy bait, and I thought I brought one of those in. But anyway, it's a Jackal Alpha 98, I think is what it was.
Okay.
And I saw those fish had come up off the bottom, so I threw that spy bait out there and caught
them. And that's actually one of the baits that I have had luck with now, and I say luck with. I've caught two fish so far this year, but one of them was on a spy bait. So, I was using a blade bait on the bottom, and I kept getting pulling up grass. Just almost every cast, I'd be hopping it, and then I'd lose my vibration, and so I'd reel it back in and have to clean grass and stuff off of it. I was like, man, I want to just stay just above that grass. So I was trying to think of what I had with me that I could throw and then count down and kind of know I was close to the bottom, but above the grass. And I switched to the spy bait, and I was using a Duo Realis a spy bait. And
you're right. It's not a Jackal, it's a Duo Alpha.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay. Yep. I was going to say, I thought so, but, man, that really helped me stay out of the grass. And I credit that with helping me catch that fish, because, the blade bait I had heard was working well, but I just couldn't find a spot that didn't have that. I wasn't having to clean off constantly. Right. So.
And in that picture, you can, that particular day, it was almost dead calm. Hardly any chop on the water, and that wobblehead jig and a football jig would have worked also, but, I really, really like them. Seems like I get a better hook up ratio with a swing head jig. But it's not creating a lot of commotion, and with the water dead calm like that, in my experience, that bait just crawling slowly across the bottom draws bites. And then when they lift it up off the, and I saw them out there, had come up off the bottom. It seemed like a spy bait worked well instead of a rattling lipless or a crankbait with a lot of wobble to it. That spybait just been almost finesse, you know, swims mm-hmm. through the water.
Yep.
And even that jig being 3/4 ounce, that's still a finesse type bait because it's not noisy or.
I was going to ask, I'd heard you say 3/4. Is that more just to maintain bottom contact or is that why you're so heavy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And if I'll do 1 ounce, I would do say if I was 30, 35 feet deep, it's easier to maintain bottom contact. Plus I can cast it a lot further in the angle you'll have, if you're, say, 35 feet deep of water, you know, the further out you cast it, the less of an angle on your line from the rod to the
that makes a lot of sense. Bait. Right, right. That's what always throws me off with a drop shot when I'm casting it because, you know, you think that you have, you know, your drop shot to your weight is, you know, a foot, but when you cast it out at an angle, that foot gets drastically reduced.
Yeah, and it, you know, the further out you, because you're going to back off because the target is here at 40 foot deep. Well, you can't be 40 feet away from it and fish it effectively. You get 70 feet, then you can get that really good drag, you know, drag through the school before it starts, you know, you're almost sitting right on top of it.
And
the bait doesn't do right then. It does a lot better with less of an angle on it. But so 35, 40 feet, I'm going, or 30 to say 40, I'll do a 1 ounce, 30 to 20, 18 maybe. 3/4 ounce, and then once I get, that's a 1/2 ounce, and that's normally in springtime they start, you know, start moving up, and you'll catch them. Or I'll do a 1/2 ounce when it's 10 feet deep. I don't normally go less than a 1/2 ounce with that wobblehead jig.
Okay.
But that.
And what kind of rod are you throwing that on? Like a jig rod?
Yeah, a 7. The 1 ounce and a 3/4, I'll throw a 7/6 as a G Loomis, a heavy action, 20-pound test.
Pretty
much always. And up there at Del Hollow, it's really clear water. And I had 20-pound test on that. They didn't care.
We're heading to Dale Hollow. I think the 22nd and 23rd of April. So I'm looking forward to getting back there to fish.
Right. I love that lake. I really, really love it. It's beautiful.
It is.
It looks to me, you know, it doesn't look like a man-made reservoir. It looks like it should be natural. Kind of like a Western lake. It's got those rock sandstone bluffs.
Yep.
The line weight, you know, I know there's a time and a place for 4-pound test or 6-pound test, but like I said, it was dead calm. I probably could have definitely caught them with a drop shot, you know, with a 6-pound test
meter
super finesse, but they were eating it with a 20-pound.
Yeah, if they're eating it, why change it up? Right. Now, with your spy bait, I would guess you'd go considerably lighter, right?
Yeah,
I did. I had a
10-pound fluoro on that. And I actually bought a rod and reel specifically for that. And that spy bait I was throwing, duo makes one for a bait caster. And I think it's that 98. It's a I swear I thought I brought it. I brought the thing.
I did.
It's right here. So it's the Spinbait 72 Alpha is what it's called. And it's so the one, let's see, the 98, I believe, is long and really thin.
Mm-hmm.
This is fat, a little heavier.
I think it's
a half ounce.
Okay.
But you can throw this with a, it's made for a bait cast.
Gotcha.
So I've got a 7.2 as a G Loomis IMAX Pro, I believe. Crankbait
okay.
rod, the medium action. You got a moderate tip, and I've got a Corrado 70, and I'll put 10 pound fluoro on it. And just to throw that bait, that's. And he can whip, I mean, you can throw that launch in a mile with it.
I actually lost one of my Duo Realis spy baits on an overpass. I was casting and it went way farther than I thought, and it ended up on the overpass. And
oh, yeah.
I'm hoping it didn't hit a car or anything, but you know, right. I won't mention the place just in case it did.
But yeah, I've got two spinning rods I use, one for drop shot and one for small swim baits, smaller swim baits. And this is really sent. I'm going to show you a bait here. And this is the Megabass Okashira.
Oh, yeah. I'm very familiar with that head.
Okay. That thing is money on these spot lakes down here, you know, Alabama spotted bass down here.
And what do you have it paired up with there?
On a spinning rod with.
Okay.
And I'll use 6 pound test on the
gotcha. Leader.
And you know, I got like 15 pound braid or 10.
It's really thin braid. But,
yeah, that's really good.
You know,
around those schools of bait, if you see the fish come up
in it, you know, you can they'll eat that thing in a heartbeat. But
now, are you counting that down to get to a certain depth, or how are you judging your depth there?
Yeah, I'll
I've got live scope, and I'll watch it go down
gotcha.
There. But before I got live scope, I would just count, say, 12, or. And it's pretty light. They don't make this, I think, is it
1/8 ounce is the heaviest head that they make of that. So it takes a, it falls really slow. And I've had
several,
quite a few fish hit just on the fall because it'll kind of, spin, you know, swim in a circle going down, and next thing you know, it's stopped moving. Your line stops moving. You're like, what the heck just happened? It's 30 feet deep out there.
Start reeling, and then you see it moving,
and then there's a fish.
Nice. I know that's generally how a tube falls. A tube, they always say, spirals like that.
Right.
And that's the action that makes a tube successful. So it makes sense that it would work for that as well.
Yeah.
What was going on up there on Del Hall at that time. It was a roadbed and a deal, and it was a school smallmouth on it, and that jig was money, I think.
Gotcha. The wobblehead. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to show some of these other side imaging and radar or the fish finder screens that you had, and explain kind of what we're looking at.
Okay.
So I'll bring up this first one here. And so, and this is side imaging, and you're looking
at that's side imaging. Now this school fish right here, I was explaining, a buddy of mine that just really got into
kayak fishing, bought him up. He had bass boat fish, but he upgraded his electronics and
was fishing where on this lake close to the house, and I just sent that to him. So this
is like 20-25 feet deep. The bait, he was telling me he had found a really big school bait, but he didn't catch any fish on it. And there was, you know,
and I said, just start doing circles like I'd said until you find, you know, this school.
I said, they're out there,
they're somewhere close to that bait. I said, on your side imaging, when you see this, and that's
those are I can guarantee you those were bass because I caught them. But yeah, those pieces of rice is what it looks like with a little shadow behind them, and the shadow being if you were to blow that thing up, the shadow, the closer the shadow is to the white speck, the closer to the bottom they are, and those fish are laying right on the bottom.
No, that makes sense.
When you see something like that, first it can be other fish. I saw on Lake Kissimmee 2 years ago, I was going across there and it was like 12 feet deep, and I saw something that looked almost identical to that picture. And I thought, oh Lord, it's going to be on. And I drug everything I had through it, to swim baits, jigs, or whatever. I never got a bite. And I wasn't sure. I don't know what they were. They were fish because they weren't there the next day. But, you know, tilapia, something. They weren't bass. But anyway, when I see that here, and I'm sure that they're bass, I'm going to throw a spoon and on them is one thing. And this is the spoon that I love to throw. It's a Dixie Jet. It's a 3-inch, and it's 3/4 ounce. Dixie Jets, I think, are made in Missouri. Tackle Warehouse has them, and then you order them straight from the website. But it's got the perfect size to weight ratio. And there's a lot of there's a lot of smaller spoons. This is a small spoon, but they'll be 5/8 or 1/2 ounce. Well, it takes forever, it seems like, for those things to hit the bottom. And this falls, gets down pretty quick, and then you can work it. I've caught a lot of fish on this. Matter of fact, this one, I don't know if you can see, I'll get it right there. It's beat to crap. It's
that looks pretty chewed on, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll throw that spoon out there and rip it, see if I can't get a bite. And, if they bite, I'm going to leave the spoon on. Normally the first thing I'll throw on school like that is when they're 20, 25 feet deep, I'll throw that spoon. Because, and here's the deal. There's a school shad, 50 yards away or 75 yards away. That, and I know that that's what those things are feeding on out there. I've thrown a jig on them, and the only way I can get bit with a jig is I put a swim bait body on the end of it. On that wobble head. You can put a Kytec on there, say a 3/8 or whatever, or 4/2, whatever the next size up from a 3/8 is, and drag it, and you can catch fish doing that. But it doesn't do the same thing that the spoon does. The spoon, when they bite that spoon, they go into a feeding frenzy. You fire this school up, you're not going to fire them up with a jig. But that spoon, you're going to fire those things up. And if you've got a buddy with you and you can keep a bait in the water, and it just extends the fun. But
I've heard of activating the school before, and I've never experienced it. I've heard that, once you get them going, then I've also heard, if you can keep them going, they'll hit darn near anything at that point.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And you'll pull every fish off the bottom. There won't be any fish on the, that picture you just showed. Once they start biting, you're not going to see that. You're just going to see like lines. That's what it looks like. There'll be like white lines on your side everywhere.
Gotcha.
Or on the down imaging, same deal. But I don't have a picture of sonar, but I remember the first time I had bought an eagle depth finder. I don't even know if they make those. Lowrance made them. It was kind of off brand for a cheaper model for a Lowrance. I bought it just because this one had GPS,
and I thought I'd, you know, get waypoints and, you know, use it for that. But it didn't have side engines, had down engines. And I came across, it was in the wintertime, and I came across some bait down there. And then all of a sudden, there's these, it looked like streaks just on top of streaks. And I was like, what in the world is that? And I've heard people refer to them as noodles. You know, it looks like a pile of noodles.
And I dropped a little it's called a flexit jig. It's a little painted white, like a slab jig, maybe a half ounce. You got a piece of prism tape on the side of it. Anyway, it's
really popular
on some of these mountain lakes in Georgia.
And I flipped it out there and got it and
hit the bottom, you know, it was spotted
bass. And I was like, and it made sense then that, you know,
when you're looking now,
if they're moving, it's not going to,
it's going to look like a streak.
Right.
So, you know, that was a huge schooling moment for me then. I was like, and every time I
see it
to this day, I know
exactly what it is. And you know, wintertime fishing, lots of people hate it.
Yeah, I was like,
I can't kill it. But I'm not going to say great electronics,
but good electronics.
And practice. And
there's several,
you know, YouTube videos
and people talking about
how to read
electronics, how to set them up,
what a bass looks like,
Fish to Moment's one of them that I've watched.
Yes.
In my opinion,
I learned a lot from him just looking at,
you know, watching that Fish to Moment.
You're moving and you see fish. Well, they're not, when you stop, they're not still there. How far back are they? You know,
That really helped me, that video where he kind of laid it out. I think he put like a milk crate behind his boat on the dry land and showed, you know, this is where that milk crate would be on this screen, you know?
Yep. So being confident in what you're seeing on your electronics is fish is the number one key for winter fishing. Because when I see a school like that, and like I said, it may take 8 or 10 casts. A lot of times, three casts and 3 or 4 casts with a lure, and you don't catch anything, gone. But I'm
confident enough to know.
I'll sit there for a long time
and
try to get them to bite. And a lot of times it works, sometimes it doesn't.
But
confidence in your electronics is number one.
How hard would you say it is to stay in the vicinity of the school? Like how far and quickly do the schools move?
I would say 2 basketball courts.
You know, they'll float around, you know, 50, 75 yards
one way or
another.
I've never
been able to find them. You know, once I find a school, like, it's not, you know, they start biting and then they stop and say, I move on to another area
and
check,
go to a creek mouth or something like that and come back.
I generally can find them again.
Just okay.
Take cover in some water, but they normally stay in a general area. I like
Tennessee River type, you know, they
may move a good bit more there. I don't know
about up north, like Great Lakes or something like that. They may
move a lot further,
but
in these North Georgia mountain lakes, in a creek arm, there's only so
they're not going to go 100 feet. They're not going to.
They may,
but if you're
catching them on a point and 40, you know, 20 to 40 feet deep,
Well, there's, you know, six more points inside that creek arm. They're probably going to be somewhere on one of those points or in between them. And, you know,
you can,
you know, pull your map up and you say, okay, I'm going to start checking. And I'm going to hit that 20 to 40 foot mark on each one of those points going down. And when I go in the troughs between the points where it drops to 70 or 80 feet deep or whatever, I'm going to be looking there too. You know, you may find them
in there, but they're
going to be in general. Look at your map, see. Here's a,
they're not on this point anymore, so
let's go check this next point out towards the lake. They're probably going to be
somewhere
in a lake.
Now, are you, when you're searching for the bait balls, are you using down imaging to find the bait ball and then switch to side to find the bass around them, or are you running side the whole time?
Side, but and I'll
have my screen split
into three windows. Map on the bottom left.
I got my map.
Bottom right's going to be down imaging, and then the entire top half
is side.
And
I use side imaging. I don't use sonar
for ever.
Okay.
I know a lot of buddies who they love, you know, they use sonar.
You can see your lure, you know, do the video game type stuff, but
I don't generally never use sonar.
Well, let's grab one more, another one of these images. Maybe you can say, explain what we're seeing here. Let me add this. There we go. So that looks just like another kind of school off to the right there.
Yeah,
there's some structure to on the left-hand side. You can see that it's rock, what it is.
Okay.
And I had switched, you know, went too straight side image just to get a better picture of it. Down imaging, there's fish.
There was fish I could see sitting on the bottom on my down imaging. But yeah, that's
a similar school as to what the picture you showed earlier of the
one prior to this. Yeah, they're just out from that rock laying there, and bass aren't going to be okay. And this one,
that's a brim bait.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So this is November,
and brim generally
don't bed in November.
At least here they don't. But when you
see, like, on your side imaging, it looks like, you know,
the cover of a golf ball.
Those divots. That's key. Oh, okay. So a brim bed is going to be the cleanest area on the bottom in that area. You know,
The brim, they
cleaned it out, and bass love it. It's like a little oasis, and you know, if you got muck on the bottom here and there, that's why they love road beds. It's cleaner
than
what's
off to the side, north
that hard bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And
every one of those shell cracker beds, they're big. That's a bass
sitting inside one of those. So.
That's it. Like you follow 2 years ago at the TOC.
And I was catching them on drop shot. Now, they wasn't big enough to win the TOC, but it was fun. I dragged that drop shot. Cast the drop shot
out and had a flat worm on it. And
just drag it, and once you feel it when you get in those brim beds.
You know, oh, yeah.
You'd actually feel your weight go down.
Drop down a little bit, yeah.
A little bit. Oh.
But, yeah.
Brim, I love,
you know, finding a brim bed like that, too. And that was in, like,
12 foot of water.
You know, shell crackers generally bed deeper than a bluegill.
Okay.
So, you find a shell cracker bed, you know, and before they go deep, you know, it
can be key. It can be
a really good area.
Now, I know some of the lakes that I fish on up in northern PA that are pretty clear and somewhat shallow, I've seen the brim bed, you know, if it's shallow, you can spot them from a mile away because it just, it, like you said, you can just see the lighter spots. It just circles of light spots as far as if you find a pretty good size of them or clump of them. And yeah, I can imagine bass. Yeah. It's those lakes are the same way. If you were drag something on the bottom, you're going to get muck. But then if you can drop it into one of those spots, it's going to be clean. Like you said, they really do clean it up. Yeah.
And even in the sun, you know, in the, when they do start bedding,
the brim, they're on bed.
That's a great, you know, chatterbait or crankbait, square bill across it, or dragging a worm.
There's numerous
lures that work great on active brim
beds, but yeah, that's
another key to it. But with the winter fishing, that
was just. I wanted to put that picture on there just to show that electronics.
Yeah.
If anybody and,
who's, you know, just getting into fishing or, you know, upgrading electronics. I've been clueless.
You know, when
you like, I got this unit that got all these features and I don't know what the crap I'm seeing.
But
when you see something looks like surface of a golf ball, you know, brim bed, and if you see those white specks in it, that's fish, and it could be brim, but those are bass.
That's cool. That's definitely and it makes sense that in the wintertime when the brim aren't using them, if there it's a clear spot, the bass are going to love it because they, like you said, they relate to that hard bottom.
Uh-huh.
Like it's the same thing that, you know, when you're thinking about a roadbed, it's that hard bottom that they're relating to there. So
right.
And
along a roadbed,
there's, you know,
rock and piles of rock, and
culverts, and
all of, you know, so there's going to be dead areas of a roadbed.
And generally, when you start seeing other structure features,
whether it just be six or eight rocks off to one side, you know, that's, I've seen fish, you know, that's the best they got, so they hang out there.
You know, that's. Right.
I forget who I was just watching a video somewhere where they, you know, had like an Olympic sized swimming pool, and you know, they didn't put anything in there, so it was just empty. And then they put bass in there, and the bass were all spread out. But then they took, like, you know, like you said, two or three boulder basketball sized boulders, put them in that swimming pool, and every bass there went to those boulders. You know, so.
Yep.
You know, they,
it's
just knowing the habits
of what,
just like deer hunting, you know, you can sit on a clear cut
and have a rifle and reach out to 300 yards, you know, and yeah, you can kill deer. But everybody I know that's really successful deer hunting, they know exactly what they're doing. At this time of the year,
they know where they feed at. They know where they bed at. They know
saddles. And it's just like read maps for fishing. When you have a point
that,
you know, it tapers down and it maybe has a saddle that goes to a hump out on the end, they generally like areas like that. You know, that little saddle. And
knowing... You know, knowing what they're doing at different times of the year is
key to being successful. It takes a lot of, it takes most of the luck out of it
when you know that stuff.
Right. Because at that point, you're not just shooting blank and hoping to stumble across them. You're actually patterning them and, you know, you're eliminating water really is what you're doing. You know,
exactly.
That you're not going to waste your time fishing places where they aren't, you know.
Exactly, and that's key. You know, I went to a tournament and had, you know,
4 days of practice and not
doing,
you know, for 3 days. You're like, I've only caught four fish
or six. You know,
I've definitely not caught anything that's going to win it, but
I have ruled out. So much, and, you know, that's, and then
the last day, you know, you use your head. You put all that together with not necessary.
They're somewhere you haven't been, and this sounds like a general statement, but if you can put
all that together, what they're not, or the places they're not at, and look at a map and know what you're looking at, you figure out what
I haven't checked
creek maps, or I haven't checked.
Anyway, you can rule out a lot of stuff and know
what to check next.
You know, that's
that's what makes you successful
is putting all that puzzle together and
right.
Putting the
pieces of the puzzle that aren't working
to the side, for, you know, going after the other places.
Gotcha. So, I guess I was going to ask you if any other baits. We talked about the Fantasy Swinger, so the Wobblehead. We talked about the Spy Bait. We talked about the Okashira. You said I think the spoon you were talking about. Did you say it was the Dixie Jet?
Yeah,
Dixie Jet. It's a, like I said, 3-inch, 3/4 ounce.
And this, I don't know why if it matters, but it's a
brass. It's made out of brass.
But this one's got the,
I think it's called crack glass is the
pattern. It's like a prism.
That's my favorite one.
Okay. And I know,
you know
they have a gold one. They have a chrome one.
They have painted colors, but that
cracked glass seems to. And I'll put a feather, hook on it sometimes, and sometimes a little
stinger hook on the head of it. But that
on a spoon
that size,
a stinger hook generally
becomes
a pain in the butt.
Yeah,
it'll get wrapped up on your line,
but.
But I'm a 3-inch, and I'll go up to a 5-inch.
Okay.
The reason being, anything, in my experience, anything over a 5-inch in a kayak has too much pull, and
it ends up pulling me to, you know,
it pulls me off my spot
towards where I'm casting.
And so the 3 to 5-inch has less torque when you're working it.
No, and I know.
Catches plenty of fish and big fish, but
let a whole lot of this work.
I was going to mention, and for any folks who want a more in-depth on working a spoon, I think when we first had you on, that was a majority of what we talked about.
Yeah.
I think we kind of dedicated that whole episode to spoons. So if you want more information on fishing a spoon, go dig back in the archives and find our first episode with Jim. If you just Google Bass Fishing for Noobs on YouTube and do Bass Fishing for Noobs, Jim Ware, you'll find the original episode that we did with Jim and where we talked in depth about spoons and how to work them and that kind of thing and how to, you know, the other options. So,
yeah. So
this is the last bait I was going to talk about. It seems like these fish have gotten a little educated on the lake I fish. Now I caught some fish on a spoon this year,
but nothing like
the past
probably 3 or 4 years out there. And
this is a Casso mate, and there's a lot of scrounger heads,
but this is
Casso's, and it's a Sujin,
is what they call it. Aaron Martin designed it, but 3/4 ounce. Let me get it right here.
Okay.
And it's got a short F feel, I think.
But it's got the
6-aught hook. And what I'm using for the bait
is a
producer swim bait,
which is made
here in Georgia.
I forget the name of the town he's in. It's in North Georgia. But it's a.
Let me see what it's called. It's called a pintail shad.
I was just going to say, it almost looks like a fluke kind of style bait.
Yeah, it's a and it's this thing's 6 1/4 inches.
Okay.
And I'm gonna tell you when you pull this thing through the water and it has this wobble on it, and you can feel. And I throw this on my Alabama rig rod, which is another great winter lure. You throw an A rig down here, but I threw an A rig this year. I caught 5-1 with throwing this thing.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Same deal. Seeing a school fish like that, or even caught.
It'll be a 3/4 ounce. I'll let it sink all the way to the bottom.
And that bill on this Sujin gives the bait so much thump. You can, you know, it's like thump. You can feel it in your reel handle, you know. And I'm just crawling it. I'm assuming 6 or 8 inches off the bottom. And it's doing this, coming through. And it's an awesome bite. Because when they hit, it's just like they, it's like something just grabbed it and held on to it. And you reel down.
And an A-rig
rod has a it's like 7'10" is the length on it. But it's got a nice tip. It's a heavy action rod, but it's got a nice tip, and it'll just load up. You lean into it. I've got some videos on. I run a GoPro. I've got a fish now out of a blue sky.
I thought that looked like a blue sky in that yeah. Picture with the fish. So
I'm getting old, man.
So that elevated seat, and I've got the XI3 on it with a 10-point GPS, and it just.
I thought
if I'm gonna fish motorized tournaments, why not?
You know, that's
like being on the deck of a bass boat.
But yeah. But anyway,
that scrounger, I caught a lot of big fish this year, and hardly anybody throws it around here.
I was just gonna say that. I would think that would be something that's probably not as popular. I mean, I've heard of people throwing it, but definitely not. Nothing like right. They probably see a ton of A-rigs, and like you said, spoons probably they're getting used to, but that's probably not something they see a ton of.
Yeah, and those scroungers are
popular on, you know, ledge fishing on Tennessee rivers in the summertime.
There was
some big tournaments won on it, right. And I forget that bait that became super popular with a scrounger. Lord, I can't think of it. Jerky J.
Okay.
So that was the that's everybody I know that throws a scrounger puts a Jerky J on it, and a Jerky J works. But I'll tell you this doggone pintail shad, it's just
it's got the look and
enough movement to it.
It works great.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll throw a 3/4 ounce, down to say 25 feet.
I'll let it sink all the way to the bottom and just
pull it right off the bottom. But also, that bill is big enough that you can pull it for suspended fish, because I caught quite a few fish this year after
I would see the bait ball and
fish in it.
And I just throw it out past the bait ball, and as soon as it hit the water, start swimming it, and it would sink down and, you know, come through at say 12, 15 feet, and I caught fish doing that too.
But, gotcha. Okay.
And I would throw a 1/2 ounce scrounger head for, you know, say for if I was fishing, the bottom was 15 feet. I'd probably put a 1/2 ounce on that.
But gotcha.
Same bait.
Same setup.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm throwing
that
A-rig rod. I
had 20 pound on it, but I've got 17. Throwing this thing, I put 17 on it. I can
keep it deeper.
And that's
heavy enough line.
Mostly and straight fluoro.
Yeah.
For the most, yeah. Fluoro. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, the 20 pound. I could keep it on the bottom, but it wanted to rise up off the bottom, that heavier line.
But 17, I don't have any problem.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that definitely gives folks quite a few options to maybe give it a try in this colder water. Because I know you're right. A lot of people do shy away from it. But from what I've heard and just the few fish that I have caught, they have been quality fish. So I think, you do tend to find nicer fish in the wintertime. Now, like up here, I have, I just don't see many people out on the water. I don't know if they think that I'm one of the few crazy people. Now, I do see more bass boats, but kayakers, I haven't seen a kayaker on the water yet with, aside from the buddy that I went out with yet this year. Everybody, I've seen quite a few bass boats, but no kayakers. Now, up here, we have to, I wear a dry suit 9 times out of 10, and, just because it's, the water temperature is pretty cold, and if you fall in, it could be a bad deal. So I don't know if that drives people away, but, I like to encourage, the folks that I know that do have them. I was like, if you can get out safely, do it, because, there is a chance to catch really nice bass. So.
Right.
It seems like all the big fish school up together, at least down here. When you find a school of fish, it's not a book where I fish at.
It's not like even at Del Hollow. There was a school,
and they were all 18 to, I think my biggest one was 20 and a half. Like a bird of a feather flock
together.
All of them was about the same size.
Yeah.
And you're talking about not seeing anybody on the water. That week I took off in December. I did
Del Hollow. And then I went to a lake up in North Georgia called Lake Burton. And it's,
we've got our
the Georgia State record Alabama bass, spotted bass.
Came from it. It was 8 pounds, 2 ounce. And
they have trout in that lake.
And
there's a
trout hatchery actually owns the lake that they use for,
they
stock all these little streams up in North Georgia. They also stock that lake. So with the combination
of the trout
and the blueback herring that's been introduced in there, these spotted bass just get really big.
So I went up there and I was catching those fish. Oh,
there's
one more bait I was going to show you.
All right.
I kept this thing for a secret.
Here you go, guys. Some juice.
I mean, I told a buddy of mine, here and there, but I sat on this thing until I
fished with a dugout bait tackle. I'm on their team. And I was talking to Jamie Koza, who owns a place, and I said, hey,
you need to get these jackal derrick hoops in. And he said, okay. He said, well,
you're going to have to
spill the beans.
Get the word out so people will buy them. I said, okay, that was one of the hardest things I ever did. I did a YouTube video last year
and throwing this thing.
So they come in a half ounce. This is it. All it is a souped up Little George,
is what I say.
Okay.
Japanese,
yeah.
Old Little George. This one's a half ounce, and then they got 3/4, and then they got a 1 ounce.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you, John, this thing's powerful. They eat it, and it's it's like I said,
I've been on like 2.5 years.
I caught so many
and big fish.
It's a little bitty bait.
I mean, you get an 8 pounder, with this little
thing
in its
lip.
That was what was amazing. But it's a jackal derricoupe, and I'll throw
the same deal with the weight
as with the
wobblehead.
30 to 40, 1 ounce, 18 to 30, three quarter and anything.
Y'all are at that half ounce.
Okay.
I throw it with my crankbait rod.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
just throw it out there past the school, let it sink to the bottom. I give it
one pop and start reeling.
You can feel the little blade spinning on it.
And
you can throw it so far. So probably twice during
the retrieve,
I'll let it drop to the bottom just to see how, you know, if the bottom's tapering
deeper, or,
you know, just to see how close to the bottom I was. And
I'll pick it back up and try to keep it at that same around, I'd say 2 feet,
you know, 1 to 2 feet off the bottom.
Mm-hmm. And,
you pull that thing through a school.
Hey. So that was the, I love that.
I love that
bait, man.
Well, that's cool. That I've seen those before, and like I've seen them on the Japanese sites before, and I think I might even have some cheap knockoffs of those. But ones I have are pretty small, but
right.
Yeah, they, Demiki makes one. I've caught fish on that. It's got like a modified
willow leaf on it. It's a really fat willow leaf blade.
And I've caught fish on
that, but I think 13
has got a tail spinner now. There's a lot of,
but that was
that one right there. I keep going. About 3 years ago, I ordered every one of them I saw
on Tackle Warehouse. I just try them out.
That's the best one.
Okay.
It's
well, cool. I definitely will try that out too, because I there's spots where I think that would be money, you know, just from what I've seen, you know, similar baits that I've thrown that, you know, seem to do okay, you know. And
buddy, he fishes bass boat club
tournaments
around here,
and him and his wife team up on it. And
I told him about it. He's like, what are you catching those big old fish on? I told him, I said, jackal caribou.
And I said,
he gets some.
So he got them. And he
don't like fishing deep water.
You know, when
he's going to fish when it's warm. Well, he won a tournament over on Gunnersville, throwing
that half ounce one, ripping it out of the grass. So
okay.
We've got a tournament coming up, Bass Nation. 2 weeks, I think, from now on Gunnersville. And
yeah,
you know, everybody's throwing trap, you know, throwing a lipless over there. I'm gonna try that.
One in it too, just to see.
Yeah, it might just be, you know, enough of a difference that, you know, if they've seen the lipless for, you know, 3 days of practice, and all of a sudden you come in with one of those, something they haven't seen, I could see where that'd be good. So
maybe nobody that. Maybe there's not anybody fishing that tournament's
going to watch this.
Yeah.
I
think it'll probably work.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, this will air this Monday, or actually tomorrow. So hopefully not too many people get clued into it. But, you know, we'll see what happens. So,
but yeah, when I go out, I'll have a drop shot rod on my boat, crankbait rod with the Derrick Coupe on it. Alabama rig rod with that scrounger.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another
crankbait rod that I throw my spoon on,
a little heavier
crankbait. As a matter of fact, it's
a 7. It's 4 throwing.
It's like really big crankbaits. That's what I throw my spoon on.
And then I spinning rod with for small swim baits, and I'll have that oak shear on there, or I'll have a
Picasso makes a tungsten ball
head jig, and I'll put a 3-3-3
Kitech
on there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most simple bait in the world, and it's dead.
Just a small swim bait. So
cool. Well, I definitely,
electronics.
Just go out, see.
even a small lake, you know, just if you are confident on one lake, that's the one you need to spend the most time on, because I'll tell you, what you see on that lake is going to transfer to Shreveport, Louisiana. Knowing what a roadbed looks like here that I saw on my electronic, I went to Shreveport for a national championship a few years ago, which is, and I was fishing a lake that would have the least amount of cypress trees in it, because I'm not familiar with that. And I found a daggum roadbed out there in the middle of the lake in an old bridge, and it was absolutely covered up with fish. I caught a 23 and a half on day one off that thing. Wow. But anyway, just getting back to that, find a lake you're familiar with, that you're confident with, get out there with your electronics. Go around looking at,
observe bait,
look for those fish
that's going to be close in the general area.
And it will transfer
over to just about any lake you go to fish.
And go where you got on that.
I think confidence is key. Yeah, I was just going to say, if anything that gives you confidence, and if you can build that confidence and be super confident in what you're seeing is what you're seeing.
Exactly.
And know for sure, yes, I found the fish. Now it's just a matter of figuring out what they want to eat.
Yeah. And then
you just go fishing.
Yeah.
It all depends on that little sucker down there on the bottom that's got the head the size of a English pea. I mean, a brain the size of a pea, if he's wanting to play that day.
Yep.
That's key.
Yep. Well, Jim, thank you again so much. That's a ton of great information. And for, hopefully that will give folks some confidence in a time of year when confidence is key, because it isn't super easy fishing at times. And knowing what to look for and then different options to throw at them is super helpful. So thank you so much.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
I wanted to give you a chance to shout out where folks can find you, and also any sponsors that you wanted to list as well. I see a lot of your stuff on Dugout Bait and Tackle, so I knew you were big with those guys.
Yeah. So Facebook, Jim Ware, Instagram, and I've even got a little TikTok deal.
Awesome.
I've put some, but it's all fishing. Not anything stupid.
And then my
YouTube page is all River Goat Kayak Fishing. Little short story with that.
River Goat.
I was gonna have a
guide service about
6 or 8 years ago. So I named it River Goat.
That's
where that came from. But I'm no longer a guide. It lasted about a year,
and I had absolutely had zero customers. Nobody wanted to pay. They want to go fishing. They didn't want to pay.
So that's where you can find me on social media.
Okay.
Dugout Bait
and Tackle.
East of the Mississippi River. I don't know.
I hadn't been west. And hadn't been north
too far, but
you can't go wrong. That they
rigging to the max. I mean, if you've seen on their
social media
some of the rigs that they've rigged out, it's amazing. And Jamie Koza and the crew down there know exactly what they're
doing, and they'll take care of you.
They've got lots of connections
They'll
take care. And if you buy something from them, it's they're in it with you. If you have problems, they're going to get it fixed. Jackson Kayak, I'm on with them, and that Blue Skies, the most stable thing I've been on. I've been
in a lot of different kayaks,
and I've been doing this for a long time.
And that thing
is my favorite so far.
But so Jackson Kayak, Casso Lures,
they make
a lot of great baits.
And matter of fact, the factory is right there in Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the town. It's
It's
between Pittsburgh and I went
to a tournament on
at Prescott
Bay several
years ago, and it was between Pittsburgh and Erie.
Okay.
About halfway.
Yeah.
Up in that area.
Okay.
There's some lake up there. It's got
a really big
largemouth in it.
Those guys
with Casso fish it. But anyway, Casso is a great bait. Shimano and G Lumens.
So that's about it. I'm just having fun. That's
I ain't gonna make a living doing
this stuff, but man, it's so much fun.
I hear you, man. Yeah, I think that's pretty much what keeps us just coming back for more. And why we do what we do and love to talk about it and go out and fish, and you know, definitely what keeps me going for sure. All right, Jim. Well, thanks again so much. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you all those tips and techniques, spilling us the juice on the Jackal. that's going to be fun to try, the Derek Coop. So I look forward to giving that a try. Guys, I'm going to make sure and I list all of the baits that we talked about tonight and all Jim's social media, Jim's social media and his sponsors too. So if you're interested in checking any of that out, just scroll down in the show notes, whether you're finding us on Facebook or YouTube, the notes should be there with links and everything to all the things we've mentioned tonight. So make sure you hop on there and check that out. Jim, again, thanks again so much for coming on, and appreciate all the info, and look forward to having you back again sometime. All right.
Okay. Yeah. It was my pleasure, man.
I enjoyed it
a lot. Thank you.
No problem. Well, guys, this has been another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin podcast, where we bring you the trips that I messed it up. The techniques, the tricks, and the tips to help you rip more lips. You guys have a good night.
See ya.
Where's my closer? I lost my closer video. We'll cut that part out.